Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Annie Harrison of Go Monkey onto the Business Bunker show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm waiting patiently for your turn, Annie, but sitting there waiting patiently. Why don't you kick off by telling people a little bit about you and a little bit about Go Monkey? And I know that you want to talk about the journey that you've been on in terms of getting Go Monkey to market, and you've got some important things that you want to talk about. So let's kick off and find out about you and Go Monkey.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me on your show. It's been a long process, but I had this great idea when I was bringing up my kids to create what I thought at the time was going to be an app, but it's actually now a web app, so that you can find things to see and do for your kids. Because parents, we were talking earlier, that everyone's in this 24/7 lifestyle. We're all working, we're bringing up the kids, and kids take a bigger role now in family life than they used to,
right.
And dads are more engaged, but it doesn't necessarily make it easier. We've got technology, and we can find out all sorts of things that are going on, but who's got the time to scroll around and see what's happening? And even with social media, it can be overwhelming for parents to find out exactly what their kids should be seeing and doing.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm just going through that process at the moment of trying to find a summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it isn't as easy as it sounds.
No.
It isn't as easy as it sounds, because there's a trillion kind of things you could Google, and it sends you all over the shop, and you just go, oh, I can't be bothered.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also FOMO, fear of missing out, which parents have. There's parental FOMO that you hear from your friends that they went to see something amazing or something was happening on your doorstep and they didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
So that kicks in. So that's why we set up Go Monkey, which is almost completed now. And it is a web app, so you can get it on your phone or wherever you happen to be. And it's an events, it's events, activities, and what we call attractions. And it's aimed at people with children, particularly grandparents as well, because they often end up being the ones that do a lot of the running about.
I'm glad she told me that.
Yep. And it works with it's preference based, and so you can put in the month and year that your child was born, and it will always be recommending stuff that's age appropriate.
Oh, okay, that's clever. Okay.
Yeah. And it's Kent. We were going to do it nationally, and we're going to launch nationally, and it was just too.
That would be a huge undertaking,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah. So we're growing it from Kent, and we're going to scale up.
Okay.
And when I say we've got attractions, we've got a lot of things that are, we call them attractions, but they're things that have been there all the time. So they're football clubs, the rugby clubs, the sailing schools, riding stables, all those things that get missed out on all the other sites that put out, this is what's happening at half term, and this is what's happening during the holidays. We've got a lot of the stuff that's there. We've got a lot of free things. You know, got country parks, cycle rides, pop-up things that are happening in the town, carnivals, all that kind of thing.
Yep.
So, and it can be local to you. And we understand parents. We like to think we understand parents. We're all parents ourselves. And we know that it's hard work. And particularly these days with kids' commitment to Wi-Fi, and they lock themselves in a room, and you can't get them out, and there's all sorts of things that you could take them to, and no, they're busy, locked in. I've just done a blog post, which is, there's a picture on it, and it says, it's a boy washing up, which is a teenage boy washing up, which is a bit bizarre.
It's a fantasy thing, this,
yeah?
Isn't it? Yeah.
And it says, the quote says, "Mum, sell my Xbox, I'm so bored with Fortnite." That's not going to happen. And this is a blog about things you will never hear from teenage boys. And so it's a bit tongue-in-cheek.
Sure.
But it's to engage with parents that they know that we're on their wavelength.
Okay.
And whilst Go Monkey goes from babies right up to teenagers, we know that it's difficult to get teenagers out. But you know, there are things that they do do.
Of course.
Listed.
So the events and attractions and the things that are going on, how are you are people letting you know about them, or do you go out and find them, or is it a combination of both?
We're going to be launching something called the Family Friendly Awards in the next couple of weeks,
right,
which is asking people to make recommendations. We've got quite a lot covered. We've spent a year and a half compiling stuff,
right,
and talking to all the big guys. We've got quite a few of the smaller things that are happening.
Mm.
We work with Facebook pulling down their events, but we've had a few issues with that earlier this year when they stopped their API.
Mm.
But we found ways to get around it.
Mm.
So
okay, and does the app do things like make suggestions? And when my kids were younger, the big issue was birthday parties and stuff like that, like how to outdo the last one that they went to. Yeah, and there were two things that happened with my two boys. Is first of all, everybody did the same thing for ages until everybody got bored, rigid with it, and then somebody tried to do something else. Yeah, have you looked at those kind of activities as well?
We haven't gone down the birthday party route, but there's plenty of inspiration. And if you log on to the site, which is actually still a blog at the moment, you can register, and we will let you know as soon as we launch, which will be. It's coming up.
Okay.
It really is coming up now.
Okay.
But I've had a long journey there.
Well, I was going to say, Annie, when I first met you quite a long time ago, and you started telling me about this idea that you'd had to do it. Well, I can't remember. It was about 18 months ago, I think. What's been going on? What talk us through this, because I think this is fascinating from a real experience of a startup. And the trials and tribulations of doing a startup. So many people don't think about this. So tell us what's been happening.
Yeah, it's interesting. You get an idea, and you know that the technology is there, and you can achieve anything. Mm. Whatever you want to do, there is the technology that can put that together. And there's a lot of help from organisations like Google, who put on sort of special shows and invite you along, and there's all these kind of offers of funding and angels and you get told you need investment, but there are organizations that can claim they can give you the investment. And so we got this great idea. We built our prototype. We knew exactly what we wanted to do, and we haven't changed it that much. We've still got a minimal viable product, but we just wanted to be able to engage with parents, have something that grows up alongside their children, and supplies events, activities, so that they know they will never miss another thing again, and the events will find them rather than them having to look for those.
Yep.
So we were very clear about that, and We did spend a lot of time trying to get investment when we hadn't actually built anything, which isn't the way to do it. Mm. And when you start up, you are vulnerable. You've got a great idea, and a lot of people latch onto you and say, oh, I know how to do that, and I can help, and I know this great technical person, and you don't want this, you've got to have that. And it gets very, very confusing.
Mm. Absolutely.
So we were on a steep learning curve, and I have learnt a lot of lessons. I've put a lot of stuff up on LinkedIn about it, I've become quite passionate about startup.
Is there one particular thing that if you were starting from scratch completely again that you would do or not do or avoid or laugh at?
Absolutely what you have to do, and it doesn't matter whether it's a family business or you're in business with a friend, you have got to get all your legal stuff in order.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get contracts arranged, director service agreements, all those absolutely watertight.
Absolutely.
Because you can go in enthusiastically, and a bit further down the line, one of you wants out or you fall out. Then what's going to happen?
Mm. It is, people don't understand this. It is entirely like dating.
Yeah.
When you meet someone that you fall for and it's all hunky-dory and lovey-dovey, there's no problem. The minute you fall out, it all goes pear-shaped.
So basically, you need a business prenup.
Exactly. Exactly. And unfortunately, so many people that start off in business avoid all of that because of the cost and the hassle of doing it, and they want to crack on and do it. As an angel investor myself, I won't invest in any business that doesn't have that in place. If it doesn't have a shareholders agreement, if it doesn't have the right articles of association, I'm not interested.
Yeah. It ain't gonna happen. We use a company called Seed Legals, which itself was a startup, but they are to the legal world what Uber was to black cabs, and they do it all online, and they can get you all your documentation all sorted out for investors. They can see everything there.
Yeah, it's all fairly straightforward stuff normally, you know. I mean, it's just a series of contracts.
Well, it is straightforward, but if you do it through a firm of solicitors, you'll be backwards and forwards and it'll be costing you thousands, and is quicker.
Absolutely. The whole field of disintermediation is where we are with technology these days. No, you're absolutely right.
But also, you asked me what else I needed to do, and I thought I just need a developer. I've got an idea. I need a developer. And you don't. You need somebody to act as an intermediary between the marketing and the development. Someone who understands the development process, who's technical, who understands the technology and can introduce things like CRM through something like HubSpot, for example, that I hadn't even considered.
Yeah.
Who understands how Facebook works and how you can pull down those events and how you can get round it when it all goes wrong. A developer won't know that.
It's funny enough, we have a blog on the radio site about this, how to spec your very first website, and we're talking about small websites, not something like yours. It is the single biggest mistake every small business makes, is that they don't think about their website in the correct way. They try to do it on the cheap for a start, and then they go to a web development agency and they go, oh, knock me up a website, and they expect the web development agency to know all the things that you just said, and they don't. Yeah, it's not for them to know. It's your business, it's your marketing, it's what you're trying to do with it. They're just techies that put things together.
Yeah, developers are like mechanics.
Yeah, exactly. They just bolt together what you give them. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that, and therefore try to get, you know, they give it to them to do, and then when it comes back not how they want it, or it's not what they expected it to look like, they throw a wobbly. But it's
but it comes back to that again, it's that managing expectations. So what's my expectation of you? If I don't know what it is, how are you supposed to know what to produce? Look at what you just said. So we do it on the cheap. We don't do it on the cheap. We do it with what money we have.
But there's
a big difference.
But the issue is it's laziness, as always. People let me explain. People are rightly worried about things they don't understand. It's like, if you don't understand cars, taking your car to be repaired can be a nightmare, because you don't, you know, you, how do you know if somebody says, oh, your carburetor's got stuck up your exhaust pipe? You don't know, do you? So you live in this fear of being schmoozed, and with websites especially, because you don't know. So the reason that it's laziness is people try to just throw it away. What you've actually got to do is spend the effort making a drawing of what you want.
Storyboard.
Storyboard of what you want and what you want your website to look like at the end. Then you've got to be prepared to mitigate that down to what you can afford, within your budget.
I would also say use someone local, someone you can go and meet and talk to and have meetings with. So many people go into building websites and they get somebody who's remote, who says, I've done all this, I've done this one, done that one. Makes it very, very hard.
And coming back to your other point, Annie, which is absolutely correct about the legals, you need to know that the person that developed your website owns the copyright to it. So many people get fooled by that. They own the copyright to your website because they developed it, unless they give it away to you, or unless it's part of the contract. And so many people make that mistake. They go, well, it's my website. No, it isn't. They designed it. Yeah. They own the copyright.
And again, with developers will often take your website and host it on a platform that no other developer can get into.
Yeah.
So if you fall out with that developer, you're
stuck.
They
won't even give you the passwords.
Yeah, they might not even give you the passwords.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're stuck with a site that no one can do anything with.
Absolutely. So the reason I use the term laziness is because people don't think about all of those things in terms of, it's a contract, yeah, and you can't just hire. You know, so many small businesses go, oh, well, my nephew did a website once, you know. Yeah, when my nephew's got a box of crayons, it doesn't make him Picasso, does it? And that's the problem, you know. It's this lazy approach to it, that because it's a scary situation, people back right out of it. But basically, you've got to look at the legal issues, you've got to look at what you want versus what you can afford within your budget. You're quite right, Bird, you know, people don't have unlimited budgets. And also, you know, things like websites, how long's a piece of string?
And also, I don't know if we need websites as much as we think.
Absolutely.
So there's another debate in itself. I think we just go all in, oh, right, I've got a business, I've got to put a website together. Uh-uh, you don't...
We get... I own a web development agency, and we get people that come to us and say, I want a website. And we've got a thing that says, do you really need a website? And we send it to them, think about this, before you even go any further, why do you need a website? Why don't you just use a Facebook page or a LinkedIn page? Why do you need a website? Yeah? You're just a sole trader. You don't need a website. You're not selling anything on it. It's just a contact page. Why do you need a website? Absolutely. Sorry, Annie, so coming back to you, you've learnt these lessons.
I have.
Sometimes the hard way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is how most of us learn things. So, from your point of view now, are you comfortable that you've got over those issues?
Yes. I had a few stallings last year, and I'm based down at Folkestone in the workshop.
I was there the other day.
Yeah.
I was there for the first time I visited. What a great place.
It is a fabulous place to work. And Folkestone's a really can-do town. Mm. It's got a great vibe and a great attitude.
Mm.
And there's an awful lot of crossover with the businesses down in Folkestone.
Yeah.
And I sat back and I thought, I really don't know what I'm going to do. I'd reached a point where I just thought, I'll see what happens. I'm going to wait. And... bumped into somebody down there, Rachel Gristock, who runs something called Marketing Geek, and she is that bridge between technology, the developer, and the marketing.
Mm.
And she has got such a great handle on the social media and how a website should like ours should work, and what should be on it and how to get it on there.
Mm.
So. And I found a developer who works there. So we are the team.
Brilliant.
And we've been working.
It's funny, isn't it, how people don't do what you've just done, you know, find that intermediary.
Mm.
And I was just thinking about that and thinking about, oh, I wonder why people don't and what other context. But a couple of years ago, I had a kitchen extension built. And once I'd had the architect draw up the plans, I was thinking about decorating it. And I happened to have a guest on the show who was an interior designer. And Beth Russeter, and she was absolutely brilliant. And she said to me, you do realise that I could project manage the whole thing for you. And it hadn't dawned on me before. So as an interior designer, she actually project managed the whole thing. You know, she got builders, plumbers, carpenters, all kinds of people that I needed, as well as doing, you know, the fluffy stuff and the girly stuff and the design stuff. Sorry about that. But you know what I mean. you know, all the nice cushion covers and stuff like that.
You know what I mean.
But she did all the lumpy stuff too, and that was just a massive eye opener. And it cost money to engage her, but it was money totally well spent because she did a fabulous job of pulling it all together based on her knowledge of how these projects work, which I don't have. Absolutely, cool.
Yeah.
So when are you going to launch, Annie?
We are hoping to launch beginning of August.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, that will be really for testing, and we'll be inviting people to give us some feedback, and we'll roll it out middle of August.
Fantastic. And you said it's a web app,
yeah.
Which, of course, is the way to go now because native apps are just... Pff, nobody bothers with them anymore because, you know, it's so much better to do a one-off web app site.
You don't have to download it. You don't have to remember to use it.
Yeah.
It's always up to date and it's on your phone.
Yeah, so absolutely. And they tend to display better as well these days. Yeah, no, absolutely. Funnily enough, in Johnson Kent, we had a native app for years and we just abandoned it because everybody used the web app and not the native app. So we stopped updating it.
And web apps are cheaper to produce.
Absolutely. Well. Yeah. No, absolutely. Annie, we wish you much success. When it does launch, how are people going to find it?
Well, people can go onto our site already.
Yeah.
It's www.gomonkey.com. And GoMonkey is spelled GOMUNKEE.
GoMonkey.com. Cool. Fantastic. We're going to look forward to that. We're going to be big users of that, I'm sure. And we wish you much success. And congratulations on getting where you've got after all that hard work. And for letting us into some of the lessons, because, you know, it's something that affects all of us.
I was just going to say that.
Will you say it then, Bird?
I will.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, do you know what, Annie? It takes a lot to be honest and open about business.
Yeah.
And I don't think we hear enough of the honesty of business.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful that you're here today, and I really appreciate you being absolutely honest and saying, look, these were the mistakes I made, because you're like, wow!
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a judgment. It's I don't think people are brave enough and courageous enough.
Business is about failure. Business is about failure. It's about what you learn. It's what you learn as you go along
it's
doing
process,
stuff.
It's a process, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I get so fed up with people that come and go, yeah, well, I spotted a gap in the market and I put that here and I made £1 million. And no, you didn't. You didn't do anything of the kind.
And it all looked like easy money with all this crowdfunding that was going on and all these people getting all this money coming in and all technology, and you've got an idea and you can get people to just... It's not that straightforward.
It's nonsense, It's nonsense. It is not that easy.
And you don't just get the money. You've got to actually deliver.
Yeah. And just while talking about that as well, with investors and crowdfunders and all the rest of it, it isn't just the money as well. It's whose money it is and what impact they're going to have on your business.
Yeah. And that's what I actually am pleased it isn't easy to get. Mm. I want it difficult to get, because actually you don't want it just so easy that they're funding a business that may not be able to have legs and run. So actually you want funding to be difficult, don't you? Because else what's the point?
Yep.
Else every business would just be up and flying, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Thank you.
You're quite right.
What's going on today?
What's going on?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk to Chris, and
Chris, he came in late, and now you've made him wait.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm getting my own back. We're fast running out of time. I've got 115 more tweets that have come in that I haven't even looked at yet.
Well, Ethel Bray loved the show. They think it's great, and they love the concept of a business prenup.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to tell you something about Ethel Bray, and I nearly forgot. So thank you for reminding me.
That's okay. We produced it.
The lovely Kate and Keith. Oh, thank you, by the way, for sending me the notebook. They sent me a notebook celebrating their 20th anniversary in business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really gorgeous. So, and the notebook is about why their company's called Ethel Bray, which was the name of a boat that is a family issue. Anyway. They asked me to mention their friend and revenue manager at the Brands Hatch Hotel, which we were talking about earlier, Peter Tappenden. And Peter's doing 100 kilometres in 30-hour challenge. I'm going to do this for the Gurkha Welfare Trust and Oxfam. And basically, if you follow Ethel Bray, ATHELBRAELTD on the Twitter, you can find out about this. But Peter is going to be doing a 100-kilometre challenge in 30 hours. Okay, and he's raising money for the Gurkhas and for Oxfam, and you can find out all about it by going to his Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising, Peter-Tappenden, T-A-P-P-E-N-D-E-N.
Nothing to do with me. Nothing.
Not a relative of yours?
How interesting.
Yeah. Is there many of you about?
Well, my husband's name, but no, not local in Kent, but...
How bizarre. What a coincidence. Well, he's the revenue manager at the Brands Hatch Hotel.
There you go. I'll go and say hello. Yeah.
You could probably blag a room.
It's family, isn't it?
Yeah, go family. Come on, I want family rates.
A whole weekend, definitely. Thanks for that.
Absolutely. There you go. Cool.
Chris?
We're going to talk to Chris. Yeah, we are going to talk to Chris. I thought you wanted to read something.
No, I just feel sorry for Chris.
Do you?
Well, yeah.
Talk to Chris.
How are you doing, Chris?
I feel like I'm being punished.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. It wasn't me at all. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank
What's
you.
New? What's new in the world of numbers?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's introduce Chris for me, because he hasn't been on for a little while, has he? And we're being horrible.
And
to
I him, called him a different name last time.
Did you?
And he didn't tell me until I was walking out the door.
What did you call him, Derek?
I can't remember what I called you.
I don't know.
He said, "Why do you keep calling me this name?" I went, "Well, obviously that's your name." He said, "No, it's not."
I thought I was missing something.
Yeah. No. It's a pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show. He has been on for a couple of months, but Mr. Chris Gaze, who's the chief accountant at Rift Accounting. So I've just made you that.
Okay, thanks.
Chris, welcome back onto the show. It's lovely to see you, as always.
Yeah, it's nice to be back.
Thank you. We were chatting about the kind of things that we wanted to talk about and some of the things that are happening in the world of business and accounting. And making tax digital. We've talked a lot with Sue and with Annie about the things that happen in business and, you know, knowing stuff that you know and technology and how it's affecting our lives. But HMRC are moving towards making tax digital. Why don't you tell us where we are in that process and what the effects of that are and what we need to think about?
Okay, so making tax digital is something you may or may not have heard about. It's been kicking around for a couple of years already. Mm. We're starting to get closer to the point where it's actually going to take effect. If you think about digital submissions to HMRC, they've been in for a while. Mm. Most people do their tax returns online, although you can still do them by paper. Mm. You have to do VAT returns online now. Mm. Then people would get some exemptions if you've got some religious belief against using a computer, which isn't very many people.
Is there one? If you're a Jedi.
Yeah, so most people are doing most of their submissions online. Company accounts get submitted online. Can be done by paper, but mostly online. And same with company tax returns. What's going to come in from next year, starting with VAT, is you're going to have to submit them in a certain way. Mm. So at the moment, you can go onto HMRC's website and submit your numbers for your VAT return, which you've written down on out of your old cathedral book or whatever you're using to do your accounts on.
Yeah, Bird, what are you using? Fag packet.
Diary.
Yeah, diary.
So you're not going to be able to do that anymore.
Yep.
You have to use a accounting software to do it.
So that would be something like a standalone package like Pegasus or Sage, or a web-based thing like Xero or ClearBooks,
yep,
or something like
any
that.
Any of those will be able, yep, to do it.
Yep.
What you won't be able to do, which a lot of people prepare their accounts for at the moment, is use Excel.
Right.
So no one has written, I don't think they have plans to write, a program that will allow Excel to talk to HMRC.
Right, okay.
So other software providers like ClearBooks, which is one that we predominantly use, have written something similar.
Mm.
So they've got what they call their micro program, which it looks very much like a spreadsheet.
Right.
You can enter your details onto that, and then it will turn that into a VAT return, which you can then submit through their software. But you're not going to be able to use HMRC's portal anymore,
right,
to do that from April next year.
Right.
So they're already piloting it, but that's when it's going to come in.
So basically, you have to use an accounting package that has its own interface to HMRC.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool.
So okay. VAT was actually the easiest one for them to do because most people are already submitting online.
Yeah.
They're also going to roll it out for all the other taxes.
Mm.
So people are already submitting payroll online through real-time information, which has been in for a while.
Yeah.
The one that's going to cause the biggest headache is going to be self-assessment.
Mm.
So people do self-assessments annually. They're going to be asking you to do them quarterly,
yep,
and submitting through software.
Okay.
And when's that coming in? Next year?
That's not coming in for a couple of years yet.
Right, okay.
And it's already been pushed back a couple of years.
Yeah.
So that's mainly because HMRC aren't ready for it.
Yeah. Interestingly, when that comes in and you're doing quarterly tax assessments, are they going to bill you quarterly as well?
Well, they've not said as such, but
of course they are.
I expect them to, yeah.
Yeah, so they already bill me in advance for my tax before I've earned the money.
So I think there's two kind of thought processes behind this. One is to kind of make everything less labour intensive from a human, mm, point of view, so they can cut costs their end, but also so they can get their taxes from you earlier.
Mm.
Which is what it's all really about, isn't it?
Interestingly, I got my personal tax code through the other day. And on the envelope that it came in, on the back it said, you know, you can set up your own personal account on HMRC to manage, yep, your tax. So I thought, oh, I'll do that for a laugh. Oh, what a performance that was. I go in to set up an HMRC gateway and it says, put your email address in and then we'll send you a code. You put the code in and it. So I do that. No code. Hour and a half later, the code comes through. Put the code in, says code's expired. Five times I did that before I contacted their help desk, and they said, well, you ought to put the code in quicker. I said, I can't put it in quicker if you don't send it to me. Five times. I actually set up an account eventually by going through a verified gateway.
Okay.
Which was interesting. I'll quickly say, this is a little bit scary. The alternative, they said, is you can get verified, so we don't have to verify you, and these are the people that we can work with. And there were some government organisations plus some private ones, like a bank, post office, a couple of utility companies. So I chose the post office, Royal Mail, just random. And the process was, what's your name and what's your postcode? And then it came back and said, which of these bank accounts do you want to use? Hold on a minute. Really? So I had both my bank accounts. So I went, oh, I want that one. And I went, okay, fine. And then it said, I can't remember all the questions it asked me, but it asked me loads of questions. But none of the questions were, can you tell us? They were all, we already know, which one do you want? That was really scary.
Yeah.
It was really scary. Bizarre.
There's another scary thing. When we were doing a research for GoMonkey, my niece, she told me that she was using an app called Y-Plan in London, and it gives you restaurants and theatre and rock concerts and sport and stuff like that. And she used it quite a lot. But she was invited to the theatre. She was a guest. So she went along to the theatre. And when she got home, she got an email from Y-Plan, and it said, oh, you enjoyed Wicked. We hope you enjoyed Wicked. You might like to come and see this play or this play. And she thought, how do they know I went there? And it transpires that they were following her on her location on her phone and building a preference based on where she was.
Yeah.
That's quite scary.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Sorry, we're going to come back to Chris in a minute. Sorry, Chris, you started a whole train of thought here with 7 minutes of the show to go. It's interesting. DuckDuckGo, who are a search engine, the guy that owns DuckDuckGo was having a right go at Google the other day and Facebook, saying they don't need to collect the data they collect because it's quite easy to serve adverts without knowing anything about you. You just do it by a keyword search, which is what DuckDuckGo do. You don't need to track all of this stuff. And, you know, I think people are starting to get a bit fed up with Facebook and people like that, tracking everything you do. I've started to try and turn off location and all that kind of stuff. But coming back to Chris, though. So, tax going digital, for the personal stuff, it's going to take a couple of years, but they're kind of phasing in the business stuff over the next few years, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. So, I think from 2020 it's going to be in.
Yeah.
It's subject to further delays, which the problem is HMRC systems aren't built to cope with it yet.
Yeah, sure.
So once they get those in place, a lot of people speculate that it won't happen, but I think they've invested too much in it already
To be honest, it's really got to happen, isn't it? Everything else is digital these days, you know. Most of the things you do with the government, if you want a driving licence, if you pay your road tax, everything is online, you know. I mean, it just is. So I think that will go there as well.
They're trying to push as much back to individuals as well. The personal tax accounts that you mentioned before, if you could get into them, they are actually quite good.
Yeah.
And allow you to actually see your tax position throughout the year.
Yeah.
For people who are just in PAYE jobs as well. So you can check to see if you're on the right tax code, this sort of thing, and change it if it's wrong.
That is good.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, that is good.
Well, I finally got my personal account set up, and I was so knackered at the end of it, I didn't bother to look what was in there. I just thought, yes, I can sign on. Thank goodness for that.
It's worth going back and having a look.
Yeah.
So can everybody get one of these personal?
Yeah.
So we just go on to HMRC and verify through the post office?
You don't need to be a business owner, or you can just be anyone.
Sort of regular, you just set up your online account. Yeah,
use one of your bank accounts, and then we're away.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyone can do it.
Cool.
The other thing I quickly want to mention Chris, is SEIS, just because we've been doing something on SEIS, and I thought it was worth letting people know. SEIS is the Small Enterprise Investment Scheme, which the government runs. Give us a quick overview of SEIS. EIS is probably a bit too big for most of our listeners, so SEIS is probably the thing.
It's an incentive scheme, basically, to encourage people to invest into small businesses. Now, these businesses have to be limited companies. They can't be sole trade businesses. So they acquire a share in the business, and those shares can be allocated under this scheme. And what it allows you to do is you get an immediate tax relief on your investment, which for SEIS, I believe, 50% of your investment straight back off your tax bill. And what you also get, if your investment turns out to be good, and you sell those shares in the future, again, you don't pay any capital gains tax on those. So it's really a good incentive to get people to invest into the small businesses. So the first onus is on the business itself to go and make sure it's eligible to use the scheme. So you have to apply for assurance from HMRC that they'll allow you to issue shares under that scheme. But once you've got that, it lasts for a couple of years, which we've spoken to Annie about, and you can get it renewed quite easily if you're outside that window. But once you've got that, and you can stamp that your company's approved to use the scheme, you can then go out to investors, be that just directly or even through kind of crowdfunding. You can put on your application that you're eligible to use that scheme, and it just makes you so much more attractive as an investor.
Absolutely. So remind us once again, what's the tax incentive behind the SEIS? What do you get?
You get 50% of your investment straight back off your tax liability
for
the year.
Okay, cool. And is that a personal tax liability?
Yes.
Yeah,
it has to be an investment by a individual company, investment by another company.
Cool.
And that's up to a maximum investment for the company of $150,000.
Cool.
There's a larger scheme for larger investments. But like Paul said, that's possibly bigger than...
Yeah, the EIS scheme. That's for another day.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you so much for that. Sorry to rush you, but we're at the end of the show. As always, it's lovely to see you, Chris. Yeah, thank you so much for coming in. And thank you for bringing Annie with you on the Counting House part of the show. But for the moment, Chris Gaze of Rift Accounting, thank you so much.
Thank you. Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.